Bilney reel number 8.
I think it may.
So we've now reached the point of the summer of 1918, and in June you finished at Calshot. What posting were you given after that?
I was posted at number 63 wing, Middle East. And I left Southampton one night in what had been a poultry boat, and arrived at Cherbourg the next day. We had one night in a rest camp, and then went straight on to a train, which was to take us right away down to Taranto in the toe of Italy. As a junior officer, I was with five others in a French railway compartment with wooden seats, which was not the acme of comfort for a long journey. And this was aggravated by the fact that the toilet arrangements broke down within 24 hours. We were also travelling north to south, which is right across all the communications to the Western Front. And so, of course, we had to stop for everything all the way down. We took, I think it was 5 days getting to Lyon, and we were all pretty miserable by then, because every place where we were scheduled to get a meal, we usually arrived hours late and either had nothing or a cold meal or hard tack. And it was the time that where there was a rest camp, and we lost quite a number of travellers there to Spanish flu, which was then raging. I myself reported sick the next morning, but I was told to go on and look after myself. But we spent another, I think it was 4 days, getting to Turin, where I was put off the train with five others, and we went into a small military hospital where we recovered after a week's kind attention, and caught an express train onto Rome. This, after the French train, was luxury, because we had a first-class compartment, and the only fly in the ointment was a very fat Italian major who reeked of garlic, and I've never liked garlic ever since. However, we survived as far as Rome, had breakfast and a wash-up, and wash and brush up in the hotel, and then hired a taxi and did Rome. With, of course, the inevitable argument with the driver at the end, who was a miserable little rat, who annoyed us intensely by insisting on talking about we Romans, and anything more unlike my picture of a Roman than you couldn't have imagined. And that evening we caught another express, which landed us down at Taranto the next day, and we were exactly one day behind the troop train, which had taken, I don't know if it was 18 or 20 days to do Cherbourg to Taranto, which was hardly rapid. One night in a rest camp, and we went straight aboard an old French ship called the Timgad, and I went down below to where my sleeping quarters were supposed to be. But as it was absolutely creeping with enormous cockroaches, I decided that the deck on a camp bed, even though aroused for swabbing down at 6 a.m, was a better bet than sleeping down below. And in due course, we steamed into the Gulf of Corinth, to the little port of Etyr, where it was very hot then, and we spent a rather miserable night there. And next day, we set forth in old chain-driven, solid-tire, peerless lorries, for I think it's about a 90-mile drive over the hills to the railhead at Bralo. And when we arrived there, we were all completely choked and white from head to foot with the frightful limestone dust from everywhere. This was a pretty miserable and very hot camp at Bralo. The only beverage was highly chlorinated brackish water. And so we weren't at all sorry to leave it the next day by train, and arrived at Salonika I think about 36 hours afterwards. There we had a temporary rest of some 3 or 4 days from our travels.
Sorry, this was Salonika.
Salonika.
Yeah.
Waiting for a boat to take us down to Mudros.
Could you describe Salonika as you recall it?
I don't really remember very much about Salonika, except the odd minarets and so on. But it was a fairly clean sort of town, but I didn't go around very much. And the only thing I really remember about it was a very delightful moonlight bathing picnic with some nursing sisters one night.
The British military commitment in Salonika wasn't
evident. Well, it was shared with the French, you see, about equal numbers. In fact, I think the French rather had a bigger share. But it was full of troops, one sort or another, French, British and Greek. And after about 4 days, we got a boat down to Mudros, where I reported at the wing headquarters and was sent over to the seaplane base to Lichna, which is at the northern end of the big harbour in the island.
Which island was this?
Mudros.
This was Mudros.
Lemnos. I'm calling it Mudros now, so to avoid confusion.
Yes. What were the duties of the naval air station at Tilikna?
Well, Tilikna had to supply the seaplane requirements for the naval force based on Mudros and all around the island. And they also served as a pool for pilots, replacement pilots and so on. And for a pool also for pilots at the substations of Sara, Skaros and Suda Bay.
Okay.
Yes, and also to supply personnel for the substations at Sara, Skaros and Suda Bay in Crete. After doing a little practice flying and convincing the powers that be that I was capable of handling a short seaplane, I myself was posted to Sara, which after the rather barren island of Mudros was a real gem. The island is about 65 miles east of Athens in the Cyclades group, and as you approach it by sea from the north, there's a small harbour and the white buildings of the town stretch upwards around a semicircle of hills. Really very beautiful. I was met on the quayside and drove to our little station at Finica Bay, which is about 9 miles at the bottom end, across a hilly road on the south end of the island. And there we had usually 3 or 4 short seaplanes, 2 or 3 pilots, a CO and a doctor, and about 60 men.
Excuse me.
Finica Bay is a most delightful little harbour, about half a mile across each way, with a narrow rocky entrance, and on the left lies a small township, but on the immediate foreshore we had 2 Bessonneau canvas hangars to house the aircraft, some living quarters for a few airmen, and just inland from that was the officer's mess, which was a mud-built house which had belonged to the German consul. And we took it over as a mess, and the CO slept in the building, and we just messed in it. The rest of us slept in seaplane packing cases in the garden, 2 to a case, which was quite comfortable with the bunk. And nearby, there was a lovely little sandy cove for bathing. Now, the function of this little unit was to carry out daily, and very often twice daily, patrols on different varying circuits around the Cyclades group of islands to see if the German cruisers Goeben and Breslau broke out from Constantinople to whence they had fled in 1915, and or to spot any U-boats or possibly subversive activities. We usually did a dawn and an evening patrol, but times and routes were varied for obvious reasons. On the whole, the weather was very good in the summer months. We did a lot of flying, and the islands, really, from the air, really looked absolutely beautiful. Little white villages nestling in valleys running right down to the sea. Sheets of rock, very often under shallow water, running out from the islands and looking like sheets of turquoise. Really, absolutely delightful. And so, really, we had a very peaceful and pleasant walk. About the only snag was feeding. Fresh rations were supposed to come down from Mudros once a week, but in fact they came about once a month. And when we had got the fresh rations, we had to exist on bully beef, some absolutely disgusting stuff called Australian tinned rabbit. I've never seen any since, thank goodness. We did have one minor tragedy, that to keep our bully beef or canned goods cool, we just put them down in a bucket in the bottom of the well. But one day the cord broke, and so we were minus 7 pounds of bully beef, which was quite serious. We used to supplement these rations by dropping the odd high explosive bomb now and again for practice, as well as for food. The technique was very simple. We anchored some sort of a mooring mark out at sea and had our motorboat in attendance, and we'd drop a bomb and the stun fish come up to the surface and the dead fish sink onto the floor of the sea. Our motorboat used to rush round with a net collecting all the stunned ones. Meantime, the local fishermen, who are adepts looking through a drum, oil drum with a glass bottom to break the reflections, looking down to the sea floor, then spearing octopus in the rocks, they used to come round and pick up all the dead ones. When they'd finished, our motorboat used to go and make them pay ransom, sufficient to feed the whole camp for probably a couple of days. And the fishermen did very well for it, probably too, because they sold the fish in the town. Well, that was that. In the hot weather, of course, we used to siesta in the afternoon, and very pleasant it was too, because you put your camp bed under a tree and walked into the garden, picked a handful of grapes or a handful of figs, and had a munch of those, and then went to sleep.
During this idyllic period, you were still flying, more or
less,
yes,
more
or less daily.
Yes, we were doing a lot of flying.
Yeah.
We were doing a lot of flying.
Did you see any enemy aircraft or enemy
surface craft? No, we never saw anything at all. I don't think it was... There were no enemy aircraft anywhere near in range, you see. And if there were any U-boats or other subversive vessels about, well, we never saw them. Now and again, we did report the odd kike, a local fishing boat, as perhaps behaving in a curious manner, but nothing very much came of it. Then... A bit later in the year, behind the harbour and Sarre itself, on the other side of the island, a repair base was set up for aircraft from the carrier Ark Royal. She was an old collier, Britain's very first aircraft carrier. She was a converted collier, and she could carry about half a dozen short seaplanes. And so we had considerable liaison with the... repair base people. There was one officer and quite a few other people there. And also, best of all, when the Ark Royal came in, we went aboard and managed to get a long bath, which was a great luxury, something we'd never had in the ordinary course of events.